whoever comes, as long as members are there. Lebogalo, how is the attendance of members?
Let me, okay. Chair, with your permission, I am going to address that part with respect to the select committee appropriations, but thereafter I'm going to ask my colleague, Mr. Manele, to address the same with respect to COGDA, Chair.
Okay, our new member is in.
Not yet, Chair Person. I've accepted Honorable Karim, Honorable Dudoit, Honorable Okam, Honorable
Mama Rahane,
not yet, Chair Person, and Honorable Ngato, not yet, Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Manele, on your side, sir.
Good morning, Chairperson. Chairperson, with your permission, I've noted that my Chairperson, Honorable Chana Dodof, is in the meeting, and Honorable Fisher. I'm aware that some members are trying to log into the system to soon be in the meeting. Thank you, Chairperson.
Now, there is Honorable Mikalakis, Honorable Nkosi is in, Honorable Zandamela is here, and Honorable Sheikh. Who else? Yes.
Okay.
Those are the ones that I can pick up.
Okay.
We are okay. We are seven from our side. You can start with the meeting, Chairperson.
Okay. Yeah, I think we can start. Honorable members, we are starting with our meeting. As I officially open the meeting, I want to send a warm welcome to the co-chairperson. Today's meeting is a joint committee meeting between a Select Committee on Appropriation and Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Provincial Portfolio Committees have been invited on finance and treasury, also National Treasury has been invited. We have FFC, also they've been invited. We have SALGA, they have been invited. I know, Honorable Totovu, I have not finished pronouncing the name of your committee. It's so long. It's all sanitation and water and everything. So this is such a powerful committee. I also want to take this opportunity to welcome all members of both committees who are present.
Recording in progress.
Hopefully other members will join us in due course. We are not going to waste time because we are many and we want to give all the members to an opportunity and enough time to engage with the presentation. There's only one item on the agenda, that is the presentation or the briefing by the Auditor General. And let me welcome the Auditor General, Mr. Kani Maluleke. You are warm welcome, Ms. Maluleke. I'm going to check the apologies from the Secretariat. Let me start with the Secretariat from Appropriations, Lubabalo, and then your colleague from COGDA will do the same. Let's hear the apologies. Who is not here?
Thank you, Chairperson. From the committee, Chairperson, we did not receive any apology, Chair. The apology that we received, Chairperson, is from Minister Dlamini Zuma, Chair, and also the DG for COGDA, they are unable to be here. However, DDG Institutional Development will be present representing Kota Chairperson. We also received an apology from the Honorable Chairperson from the Eastern Cape, Honorable Luane. However, the whip of the committee, Honorable Zimbayo, is present in the meeting together with the Honorable Matiwane, who is the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Co-Opted Chair. I'm not sure, chairperson, whether I can also address the issue of confirmations with respect to the delegation from SALGA. Or maybe I must leave that part, Chair, to you.
You can do that at once.
Okay, thank you, chairperson. From SALGA, chairperson, Councillor Baloyi and Honorable Councillor Mapena, they are going to be part of us, chairperson. I saw them in the meeting, Chair. Also, I recognized Honorable Lekhanyane from I think this is from Limpopo, chairperson, Honorable America. However, Chair, it's not going to be possible for me to cover all the provincial chairpersons and members. Some I do recognize, some I don't recognize, chairperson. So maybe at a later stage, you might give them an opportunity to introduce themselves.
Honorable DC is also on the platform. I just spoke to him in the morning.
Yes, chairperson. Yes, okay. Yes, chairperson.
Okay. Our apologies for those chairpersons or the whips or committee members from the provinces who are on the platform and are not recognized. Your colleague can deal with the apologies. Oh, before we go to COCTA, Honorable Detroit has requested to leave the meeting at 12 due to other pre-arranged commitments. COCTA?
Chairperson, we only received formal apology from Honorable Mutetwa, only one member. Honorable Chair, apologies. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Karim.
Yeah, Chairperson, I did leave a message for you at 9:13 to say I have to go to another meeting at 12:45. I also spoke to Lubabalo at about 9:15 or so. Thanks.
Okay. Those are the few apologies. But from our side, it looks like we have to push, honorable members. We will rely on you, both myself and Honorable Totovu, as the drivers, because we will like to close the meeting while you are all here and you are able to participate and get the understanding on what we agree on or on what approach we agree. Please, you will assist us. Without any waste of time, let me hand over to...
Yeah, can I say something, Chair?
Oh, Honorable Mpisi?
Yes, thank you. Apologies, Chair, to delay you a bit. I'm a chairperson in the Gauteng province, and my view is that there are days that are set aside for political work, and there are days that are set aside for parliamentary work. Now, I know that we're not working as we normally do, but I think it is something that I'm just raising it as a concern that I think the committee can notice, Chair, that more often, we have apologies without going to details about what the apologies is all about. But most of the time, every time when I join this meeting, the members that will not actually attend or either attend but leave early the meetings and expect us, for example, other provinces to be there the whole day and participate. If members directly elected to Parliament and NCOP do not take this work very serious, how do they expect us to take this work serious? Because if there are apologies and we have invited the Auditor General to come and talk to us about the challenges that we are faced with at the level of municipality or at times at the level of a provincial and national government. So I'm just raising it as a concern that I feel that some of us are not taking our work very serious, in as much as others might be genuine, but I feel that most of us, our priorities now, because we're doing things virtually, are not in a space where we can safely say that all of us are taking the work serious. If you as a chair is there and ourselves as chairpersons from provinces can take this work very serious, what more members who are directly elected to these portfolio committees and are not taking that serious? I'm just raising that as a disclaimer, Chair. I won't raise it again, but I feel that I should raise it now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gauteng. Very profound.
Chairperson, I've put my hand up.
Yeah, I will come to you, Honorable.
Okay, thank you.
I think, Honorable Mkhosi, you are very correct, and it's upon us as chairpersons from this side, when after the meetings, if we see that there's been absenteeism or more apologies or apologies that we couldn't understand, we will always engage members. And we have not reached a state where we need to take the matter up. But so far, at least the members do talk to the chairperson. Like, I saw his missed call. I tried to call him. We couldn't get each other. Honorable Tidoit, I spoke to him this morning. He explained to me. Those are the two members that I spoke to. But your concern needs to be noted and taken serious. And it's good that is raised in a meeting. Honorable Karim?
Yeah, no, I mean, in fairness, I agree with Mr. MPC. I mean, he's right. But perhaps we should give an answer, lest he thinks we, you know, not he, but maybe others think we're swimming here on the beaches of Msunduzi or something right now. Actually, there's a chairperson's joint meeting, Comrade MPC and others, which has been sprung on us yesterday. It affects the two committees directly here. That's the appropriations and finance. Now, the chairperson can't be vacating the seat. So the item on the agenda is the medium-term budget policy statement. MPC, Comrade MPC, you know that, right? And there are deadlines they set in law. So the NA and NCOP committees are meeting to look at urgent legislation and looking at how we manage the MTB PS process legally. And the appropriations committee has got before it, as you will see, Comrade MPC, your committee as well, I think, the appropriations bill. So for that reason, I have to go at 12:45. The item's on the agenda. But I agree with Comrade MPC. Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Karim. We have noted with the concern the apologies that are like standing each time you come here as provinces compromise, sacrifice. There are apologies from the members, permanent members, but also we have been raising concerns about the participation of provinces. So both ways. And you did indicate, I remember Honorable Dennis said Gauteng is always here, and we confirmed that. But having said that, we will deal with the matters. Having said that, can you lower your hand, Honorable Eunice, or do you still want to speak?
Sorry, I'll do that right now, sorry.
Thank you. I will hand over now to the AG, Mesakane Maluleka. We are all yours. We are in your hands.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. And thank you very much to the chairpersons, the honorable chairpersons of the committees, the honorable members of the NCOP. I noted that there are colleagues from SAGA as well as from government. So I would like to acknowledge their presence as well. I know it's a busy time, and so we appreciate the opportunity to share our report and the insights that we've derived in the course of our audit work. And we do this so that we can enhance oversight and governance. The conversations today are also quite important for us because they provide feedback that we can then incorporate into the planning of our future work so that we do deepen our journey around facilitating effective oversight and therefore strengthening the systems of accountability and transparency. The audit report I will talk to today relates to the year that ended on the 30th of June 2020. So that's 14 months ago already. We are busy with the audit of the year that followed, the one for 2021. So I think we must just remember that the information and the statistics do relate to the period ended June 2020. And 2020 was a year in which which marked the fourth year of this particular administration, which administration we have consistently warned about the impact of continued accountability failure on the integrity of institutions of local government, the impact on the ability to maintain proper capabilities as well as to deliver services. I will now go on to the next part, the next slide number three. I know Makapoi is busy assisting me. I'll just go on to slide number three for the moment, which really just reminds all of us about the information that the now late AG Kimi Makwetu shared at the time that he delivered the report for the year ended June 2019. And he had titled that report, Not Much to Go Around and Yet Not the Right Hands at the Till. And at that time, he highlighted that the local government finances were under severe pressure. He talked about the need for more sustainable long-term solutions to be brought to bear if we are going to see marked and sustained improvement in how municipalities run. And he cautioned the over-reliance on short-term and costly solutions. He also talked about the importance of investing in the disciplines of supervision and monitoring across municipalities and highlighted the importance of institutionalizing strong preventative controls so that indeed the problems can be detected quickly and they can be fixed as soon as they are detected. And he highlighted that leadership and oversight should use AGSA reports and briefings to identify key areas that need attention. And at that time, we were just celebrating the promulgation of the amended Public Audit Act, which gave the audit office increased responsibilities and powers to drive accountability within local government and this across the public sector. He also still highlighted that it was important for consequences to be affected where there are problems identified. And so when we look back on the message that was shared way back then, and we then audited the 2020 financial year, it became quite clear that our message from the previous year had not been taken to heart. And to share a few statistics around what we found when we audited local government in the year ended June 2020, we found that financial health continued to deteriorate. And it's important to note that this happened in the year that was not fully affected by COVID-19. So the impact of the pandemic was just a few months in the year that ended June 2020. The full impact we will then see in the 2021 audit reports when we share them. Some of the things that make the financial health of municipalities so concerning are that revenues budgeted for, but even at the point of budgeting and those budgets being approved, it is clear that that revenue is unlikely to be collected. And yet expenditure is planned against those revenues, which really is about approving unfunded budgets right at the beginning of the financial year. And this leads, amongst other things, it leads to unauthorized expenditure, which we reported at a figure of 14 billion rand for this particular year. We saw that there was high reliance on the equitable share and the conditional grants that were allocated to municipalities rather than generating own revenues. So the billings and collection disciplines were not quite there, and there was an over-reliance on the appropriated income from the national purse. And much of that money was dedicated to paying for salaries as well as councillor remuneration. As much as 46% of the funding that came from these two sources. Conditional grant of equitable share was associated with expenditure on salaries and council remuneration. And this shows up on the next slide, slide number 5, please, Makapoy. We also saw that there were late payments to suppliers, being ESCOM, the water boards. We also saw late payments to SARS in the form of PAYE as well as VAT, and that resulted in penalties being incurred by the municipalities. So a combination of the interest and penalties associated with late payments would have contributed significantly to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was reported in the year. We found that there was low expenditure on infrastructure maintenance. 2% of municipal budgets were spent on maintenance rather than the norm of 8%. And this has a direct impact on the condition of existing infrastructure and the ability to reduce the losses associated with the distribution of both electricity and water, as well as the reliability of the supply on both counts. Some of the things that we believe need attention if we are to deal with the financial management problems within local government are really about the basic disciplines that are instituted year on year. The disciplines of ensuring that accounts are reconciled regularly, that there is adequate in-year reporting that facilitates monitoring, and the ability to even course correct as the conditions on the ground are changed from what we would have assumed at the point of agreeing on budget. And the thing that tells us that the monitoring controls, the preventative controls, the daily, monthly, quarterly, half-yearly disciplines are not yet effective is the quality of financials that are submitted to us for audit. When the year ended on the 30th of June, we were in the middle of lockdown. So instead of municipalities being given 2 months to prepare financials and submit to the Auditor General for audit, they were given an additional 2 months. So they had 4 months within which to prepare financials. And even then, we still had 11% of municipalities not submitting on time. And those that did submit on time, only 28% of those gave us quality financial statements. Yes, it's important to note that through the audit process, municipalities were given the opportunity to correct the first version of the financials that were given to us. And that allowed them to publish financials that were credible in 58% of instances. So quality financial statements were only submitted by 28% of municipalities. And that's an important indicator of weak controls and weak disciplines around financial management during the course of the year. And in a scenario where financial resources are lean and the demands and wants of citizens are growing, it's critical that proper financial disciplines be instituted and maintained. We also raise a concern that this level of poor financial management practices prevails even though there has been significant investment in the function that should be about preparing proper financial statements, the finance functions of municipalities. We're seeing that we've spent 4.5 billion rand on the salaries of people employed to run the finance functions within local government. We've also then gone and employed consultants to come and do the work that those same people should have been doing to the tune of 1 billion rand. So a combination of the salaried people as well as consultants being now a total of 5.5 billion rand spent on this function of preparing financial information, maintaining proper financial records. Despite that significant investment, we still found that the ability to generate credible financial information was quite lacking. The story about consultants, and I'm moving now to the next slide, the story about consultants is one that we have raised over many years. And we raised because, not because we think that using consultants and bringing in expertise to supplement what you have is problematic in and of itself. Our concern is the inappropriate and ongoing reliance on consultants and reliance on consultants to do the basics. So to give you some statistics on this particular issue, having spent R1 billion this year on employing consultants to do the work of preparing financial information so that it can be submitted for audit. We then asked our auditors to check what was the reason for bringing on these consultants. And in most instances, it wasn't because there was a lack of people to do the work. So the vacancies were filled in most of the instances. The issue was that the people in those roles were not skilled to do what was required. And they had neglected the basics of ongoing financial management. And when they then over-rely on consultants to now put together financials at the end of the financial year, the ability to get to a point where you have credible financials that can be supported by proper records, that ability is compromised. To make the point a little bit more clearly, it doesn't matter how much we pay a consultant to come and help us at the end of the year. If a municipality has neglected to maintain proper records to show what they are spending money on during the year and to check that that money is indeed going in the direction it should, by the time they try and employ consultants to help them, those records, when they are not there, the financials simply have no credibility. Because even if we're given a set of financials as the AGSA, when we get there, we're going to ask the same question of saying, where are the records to support this information? And if those records are not there, then we're unable to sign off and confirm that the financials are credible. Worryingly, the municipalities that use consultants the most, in that they pay them the most amount of money, are those that end up with adverse and disclaimer audit opinions. Now, remember, disclaimer audit opinion is when the Auditor General says, we've tried our very best to get to a point where we can give you, as the user of financials, some information about the credibility of these financials. We simply cannot do that. We have tried to look for records. We have asked the people running the municipality to give us records to justify the numbers that they're presenting, and we simply cannot confirm that these numbers are right. So really, that's a stage where financial records have not been maintained during the course of the year. Information to support what is being said isn't there. On average, municipalities that got adverse opinions or disclaimer audit opinions, which are the worst kind of audit opinions, they are the ones that spend on average 10 million rand at a go to employ consultants just for the purpose of helping them compile financial information to submit to the Auditor General. We raised this very sharply because the role of an MM as the accounting officer responsible for the municipality is stipulated in the MFMA. And one of the critical duties is to maintain proper records of how public funds are being spent. And when they fail to do that, they are flouting the law. And then they enter into this exercise of employing someone to come and do this work, and yet they still can't get it right because the basics of maintaining records are simply not there. Maybe to make an example so that the story becomes even clearer, Mogalakwena municipality in Limpopo got an adverse audit opinion. They spent 34 million rand employing consultants to come and prepare financial records. And actually the 34 million rand is less than what they spent the previous year. So this is an ongoing expenditure that they enter into. When we looked at why they still had an adverse audit opinion, in that they were unable to support material balances on their financials, we also found that they actually had employed people in the finance unit and paid a total of 111 million rand for the function of preparing financial statements and managing finances. So a combination of the 34 million rand and the 111 million rand spent on salaries gives you 145 million rand, and yet we had financials that were lacking in credibility. When we looked a bit deeper about why this would be, it became apparent that there has been no CFO in place for the whole year. Rather, that vacancy was filled by other officials within the municipality during the course of the year. So different managers played the role of CFO during the course of the year. And as a result, the proper controls were not maintained, and the ability to present credible financial information simply was not there. So you cannot rely on consultants to do a quick fix at a very costly amount when you haven't actually done the basics of making sure that the finance function is properly led, it is properly staffed with people who have the requisite skills, and the key disciplines of maintaining good financial management practices are in place. You simply cannot enter into the short-term solutions and hope to succeed. I'll move on to the next slide, which talks about a theme of our report this year, where we dug deeper on the disclaimer audit opinions. Now, the disclaimer audit opinion, as I've said, is the worst audit opinion that a municipality can get from our auditors. This year, we looked at 22 municipalities that had disclaimer audit opinions. And we asked a simple question. What information do we have that can tell us something about the municipality that we, as the audit office, can vouch for? And what we have is information about what was allocated in the form of equitable share and conditional grants on the one hand. And what we have are bank statements that come from the bank, because our problem is that we cannot give Reliance a tick of credibility on the financial statements of that municipality. So we took the information that comes from the Treasury on the one hand, and we took information from the bank. So what we found was that a total of 6.5 billion rand, being a combination of the total equitable share and the conditional grants, that amount went into these 22 municipalities. What we then found is that looking at bank statements, just under 1 billion rand was still in the bank account. 980 million rand was still in the bank account. So the spend of 5.5 billion rand during the course of the year, in many ways, cannot be vouched for, because having conducted our audit work and looked for records to support what was being said to us in the form of financials that were submitted, the Office of the AG is unable to indicate that the financials are credible. So we simply don't have the ability to give transparency, and we don't have the ability to hold anyone accountable for what has happened in terms of the money that has flowed. We also, as the audit office, cannot support those responsible for the municipality and those responsible for overseeing that municipality in sharing information with the public about what has happened with these public funds. So it's a very worrying story. We say on that slide that all municipalities that receive disclaimer audit opinions on a regular basis did not submit financials to us for audit. So I'll give you an example of some of the auditees that didn't submit financials. One was Masilonyana in the Free State. This municipality has failed to submit financials for 3 years now. It has been under administration for 31 months, or certainly it was as at the end of June 2020. The 17-18 financials were submitted to us in December of 2020. And so that audit for 17-18, for the year ended June 2018, is now being done. And now we're starting to catch up. But it tells you that over the 3 years, the ability to present financials even for audit was not even there. The municipality in 2020 received 200 million rand in the form of equitable share and conditional grants. And at the end of the year, they were left with only 2 million rand in the bank account. And we, as the audit office, are none the wiser as to what has happened with those funds, and we are unable to add value into the system of accountability and transparency, even though we would have tried to do so. Another one is Marutia Pufum. They hadn't submitted financial statements for the last 2 years. This is a municipality that has received disclaimer audit opinions for 14 of the last 15 years. And the only year where they didn't have a disclaimer was the 2015-16 financial year, where they submitted the financials late, but we were able to do some work and they didn't get a disclaimer audit opinion. They also relied on consultants in that particular year. They've been under administration for a period of 27 months, and they continue to use financials to help with financial statement preparation. They received 878 million rand from the fiscus in the year under review, and they had 42 million rand left in the bank account. In terms of the expenditures associated with that money, as the AGSA, we are unable to give any confirmation of what that money has done. We also looked carefully at who these municipalities are, these 22. So I've given you some sense of the ones that didn't submit, but if you look at the map, you'll see that there are disclaimer audit opinions given to a number of municipalities in different parts of the country. And some of these are municipalities that, as I indicated earlier on, benefit from significant transfers from the national fiscus and are not able to give credible information around how they have spent these funds. In our general report, in chapter 4, we give some detail on the type of stories associated with these municipalities. So, for example, if you look at our general report, you'll see a story about Madibeng, which is in Brits in the northern west, that gets 1 billion rand of money from the national purse, ends up with 261 million rand in the year, spends 24 million rand on consultants to help them prepare financial information, and they're unable to deliver basic services. Access to water is an issue. They're unable to bill appropriately and collect appropriately, and therefore continue to rely solely on the transfers from the national fiscus for their survival. You also see in our general report reference to Legwa in Standerton, which is the one that has been put under administration and endorsed, which administration was endorsed by cabinet. And you remember that Legwa is the site of a number of public protests. It's also the place where Astral Food is a key employer and generator of local economic development activity. There's a problem around reliability of access to electricity, a problem around reliability of access to water, which is now getting attention from the administration. That's another municipality that has a disclaimer audit opinion. And you also see stories about Umzinyathi, which is in KZN, which pays significant amounts to consultants to help them prepare financials, still ends up with a disclaimer audit opinion year on year, and still receives 600 odd million rand from the national fiscus and spends it, right? But is unable to account for it reliably. I'll now move on to the next slide, which just deals with the performance information. As the honorable members will know, when we audit, we look at financial information, we look at performance information, and we look at compliance. So I've just been talking about financial information. I'm just turning now to performance information. At the beginning of their tenure, this administration would have compiled the IDP, and every year distilled those plans into annual performance plans, and does every year present and does have to prepare an annual performance report every year. And we audit that performance report, and we look at whether or not the information included in that performance report is useful and reliable. And when we can tick that, what it does tell you is that the disciplines of planning performance, monitoring it, and reporting on it year on year, those disciplines are strong. When we don't give you any comfort around the reliability and usefulness of that information, then you need to know that the disciplines of planning performance, of ensuring that the plans in the IDP and the APP are being implemented in a way that's expected, and that the budget supports that implementation, and the actual expenditures against those budgets are consistent with what has been planned. So it's quite important for us to give you a sense of what we found around performance information. Only a quarter of municipalities gave us quality performance reports to audit. Similar with the story around the financial information. If they're unable to give us quality information to audit at the very beginning of the audit process, it tells us that the discipline of planning, monitoring, and reporting on performance on an ongoing basis are not there. Through the audit process, another 24% managed to amend their performance report so that we could sign off on the credibility and usefulness of the performance reports that were published, which is a good thing. However, what we caution against is that we must not neglect this area. It needs constant attention. And incidentally, the performance indicators and targets and reported performance that we looked at related to access to water, to housing, as well as to sanitation. So those are key service delivery initiatives that any municipality is charged with. So it's critical that we strengthen the controls and the disciplines around that. On the compliance aspect, which is the third part of our audit process, we continue to look at matters relating to procurement, and that's now on the next slide. We look at matters relating to procurement in particular, and what we found was that the instances of procurement findings remain quite high. And it's in the areas of uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes, matters relating to awards to employees of the state, as well as political office bearers, which is prohibited in terms of the MFMA and related precepts. We also found that there were limitations in some of the audits that we wanted to look at. Put simply, in some municipalities, we would pick an item to audit, we would pick an expenditure and ask for documentation that can confirm that the process of acquiring that particular good or service was consistent with the required practices. And we were unable to get the documents from those auditees, which then places a limitation on our audit. It highlights matters about the records management, but also matters around the disciplines that facilitate proper accountability and transparency on how public funds are managed. We always say that the issue around irregular expenditure is not so much that it can occur. What we worry about are two things: where it occurs repeatedly, and also where it goes unattended, such that the accumulated irregular expenditure never decreases. This is important because what it tells you is that if there are repeated findings, the discipline of taking every audit process seriously, taking those findings seriously, implementing the corrective action that's required, those disciplines are not there. And so, and that's what the MFMA requires of every accounting officer, that if at the end of an internal audit or an external audit, there are particular findings, you've got to respond to them. And you respond to them by investigating what led to the problem, by figuring out what controls need to be fixed and strengthened if you are to avoid a repetition, whether it's a training issue, whether it's a discipline issue. You've got to look at whether or not there's been loss, and if so, stem it and recover losses that may be incurred and ensure that the matter does not recur. What we're finding is that year on year, we continue to report on irregular expenditure and it goes unattended. The responsiveness of accounting officers simply has not been what is expected to be as designed in law. The figure we reported on this year for irregular expenditure was 26 billion rand, and we were very quick to say that the number was likely to be understated, not because not all municipalities had been audited by that time, but also because a good third of municipalities were qualified on the completeness of their irregular expenditure. So this is a matter that requires some attention, because we've got to have a scenario where we build institutional strength by resolving matters as and when they're identified, and have a discipline of fixing controls on an ongoing basis. I'll just now move on to the next slide, which deals with the actual outcome. So what we reported on this year was that 27 municipalities had clean audits, which was an increase on the previous year. And this is as at the cutoff for publishing purposes. We also reported that there were 89 auditees that had unqualified audit opinions on their financials, and had findings on procurement or on performance information. This is really where the financial information is credible and we can tick that off, but the performance information may not be, and there have been compliance issues identified. We also reported that there were 66 municipalities with qualified financial statements, and they would have had findings on either the on compliance or on performance information. 6 with adverse audit opinions, and 12 at the time that we did the analysis with disclaimer audit opinions. The 57 on the blue is the number of audits that we had not yet completed when we started our analysis. So we've subsequently looked at that, and maybe just to move on to the next slide to give you a sense of where the audit outcomes sit now following us publishing this report, because the work of completing the audits has continued. As at the 2nd of September 2021, we'd finished another 48 audits. So the 57 that were outstanding was reduced to 9, which is where we are now. The 48 that were completed subsequent to our publishing this report, these are the outcomes. We had 3 clean reports, and these were in Stellenbosch, as well as Hesekwa and West Coast District. The others were unqualified, qualified, and a number of disclaimer audit opinions. The reason for the delay in completing these audits related to some late submissions, but also related to difficulties of auditing in the context of COVID-19 and the lockdowns and the need to keep people safe, both our staff and the staff at the audit team. So this cycle was particularly challenging. But I'm glad that through the partnership between the teams of the audit office as well as the teams at the auditee, we've been able to push out a lot of these audits and complete them so that now the accountability processes can get underway. The 9 audits that are still outstanding, those are where there's been late submissions or even non-submissions. And there are also where there have been delays on the part of the audit team. The audit outcomes for us, when we look at them, tell a story about the importance of building leadership stability, so that especially at the level of the administration, the MM and the CFO, so that there are people who have the tenure that allows them to do what's required, to build the teams that are capable and strong, to design and implement proper controls, and to ensure that where there are problems, they can respond to them on an ongoing basis. We've looked at this year on year, and we find that there is an inextricable link between the municipalities that have leadership stability, especially at the level of municipal manager and CFO, and clean audits. And on the other hand, where the MM and CFO are not in their roles long enough, that's where you get the disclaimer and adverse opinion. To share some statistics, on average, a municipality that has got a clean audit and is able to maintain it year on year, that's where you have an MM that's in their role for 71 months on average. That's where the CFO has been in their role for 60 months on average. On the other side of the scale, the ones with disclaimer audit opinions, MMs on average are there for 22 months and CFOs are there for 21 months. I'll remind you of the example I made about Mogalakwena and the lack of a CFO over the course of the year and what that meant for the ability to generate proper financial information and how that can even translate to the ability to deliver services. As you know, Mogalakwena has also been the site of instability at the political level, with a council that has had a number of stability issues. Some examples around the point I'm making. If you look at Rand West City in Gauteng, they had 3 CFOs in 1 financial year. And in that year, they actually went backwards from having an unqualified audit opinion to a qualified audit opinion. Muretele has a qualified audit opinion once again. They had a CFO and MM role, both roles being vacant during the course of the year. The internal audit function and the audit committee functions were not established. Another example on the other side of the spectrum. Nxuma municipality may not be a clean audit municipality, but here's their story. They've seen gradual improvement over time from having a disclaimer in 2016-17 to having an unqualified audit opinion in 2020. Over this time, they filled their vacancies, the finance unit has been adequately staffed, the MM and the senior managers have taken ownership of the financial and performance management processes within the municipality. And it is credit to that that the municipality has been closing ground and moving in the right direction. So really our point is about making sure that we create administration within the municipality that has got people with skills and people that have tenure so that they can actually do what's required. And a council that supports, a council that's stable, and a council that holds them accountable, holds the administration accountable for driving ongoing improvement. To give you some sense of the provincial messages, in the Eastern Cape, and now moving to the very next slide, in the Eastern Cape, Senu municipality is yet another one of the municipalities that has sustained a clean audit outcome for many years. And so we believe that that is one of those stories that can inspire other auditees, other municipalities within the Eastern Cape to move in the right direction, because they demonstrate that the things we talk about as an audit office are not only desirable, but they're also attainable. The mayor of Senu has been reported to document herself around how the municipality functions, how there is role clarity between the council, mayor, and the municipal manager, how there is stability in both areas and how they complement each other in terms of running that municipality, and how they even have a disciplinary board to ensure that where things go wrong, accountability does take place. In the Free State, one of the stories around the Free State is one about financial health, and we've been raising this one for many years, and we've cautioned about the neglect on key accountability practices, such as where there's been irregular expenditure or where there's been adverse audit outcomes, that action should be taken. And in a number of instances, this has not been the case. And that's one of the reasons why you'll find that not only are there no clean audits in the Free State, but there's a dominance of qualified audit opinions, a number of uncompleted audits because of non-submission or late submission, and a number of audits that need disclaimers. And as I go on with the rest of the presentation, I'll share with you some of the stories around the specific municipalities that show up in that space. The one I'll talk about now is Machabeng, because in this year, Machabeng had an adverse audit opinion, so not a disclaimer. But Machabeng has had a history of irregular expenditure that goes unattended. It owes Eskom over 5 billion rand. It owes the water board a similar amount of money. And it has it is the site of a number of public protests around access to water. And when we dig deeper, what we find is that not only is water distribution infrastructure so poorly maintained such that there are distribution losses on an ongoing basis, but the stability of that supply, the reliability of that supply is also compromised. But also another feature here is that because of the inability to pay the water board, water treatment plants are not operating at the level that they should. So the ability to acquire the chemicals that allow for water treatment plants to run the way they should is compromised. So the water board can't buy what they need to buy so that water supply can continue. And as a result, you end up with a negative impact on the lived experiences of the residents of those towns. if we look at Gauteng province, the city of Ekurhuleni and Midvale are the ones where they've had clean audit outcomes this year. Midvale has maintained a clean audit opinion for many years now, and throughout this administration, in fact. And one of the key ingredients to Midvale being able to maintain this clean audit opinion is really around stability of leadership at both administration and at political level. And that's one of the stories about how one can create ongoing improvements to the control environment and therefore deliver predictable levels of delivery and outcomes for the people of that town. If we look on to the next slide, where I look at KZN. In KZN, one of the clean audit opinions relates to Okahlamba municipality. And there, the insights that our team share with us around why Okahlamba municipality is able to maintain a clean audit record, it is that they have institutionalized controls. There is stability at key levels of the municipality, and the functions of internal audit and audit committee work well. Now, with that contrast to the story I shared with you around the Westland in Gauteng, where because you don't have stability at the administrative level, there's no one really there to make sure that internal audit is established and functions properly to support the internal control environment, and audit committee is there to support the accounting officer to do what they're supposed to do. So here you've got the exact opposite, where those functions are there and they've been institutionalized and they add value to that institution. In Limpopo, one of the great stories about Limpopo in this year is that there have been no disclaimer or opinions in Limpopo. Over the last year, there's been significant investment in making sure that municipalities move out of the disclaimer audit opinion zone. And that's why you have the dominance of the qualified and unqualified audit opinions there. What we caution here is that these improvements are good and they're encouraging and they're inspiring. What we need to do is make sure that we make them sustainable, because up until now, these improvements have been driven by expenditure on consultants. And what we've got to do is build on these achievements so that we start to build sustainable key control environments in those municipalities. Mpumalanga, that's a province that has gone backwards over time. It has a number of municipalities that submit late, if at all. It has a number of municipalities whose financials are of such a poor quality that the audit process becomes extraordinarily difficult, not just for the auditee, but also for our audit team. In fact, our audit teams tell us that it is incredibly difficult to audit in many of these municipalities because the discipline of preparing financial statements is just so poor. So the things to fix in Mpumalanga are really about making sure that there are strong internal controls, that there is consequence management where things go wrong, and that we stem the deterioration that we've seen over time. In the Northern Cape, one of the strongest messages we had this year was about financial health challenges across a number of municipalities in the Northern Cape. There are a few that don't submit, but that's a small number, and I'll share a few stories about that as well. In the Northwest, that's where the submission story is the most disturbing one, where there are either no submissions or very late submissions. And then, of course, the poor quality of submissions at the point of starting the audit. This is a province that has a number of repeat disclaimers and a province where the experiences of citizens in many ways can be linked to the inability to manage the affairs of a number of municipalities and to ensure that the finances and the performance of those municipalities remains well controlled. In the Western Cape, this province has maintained its record as holding the highest number of clean audits across its municipalities. They benefit from a very strong leadership tone. They also benefit from strong support from the provincial government. What works here is that before the financials are submitted to the Office of the AG to audit, each municipality has the benefit of the provincial government reviewing those financials and making sure that they're at the right quality right at the beginning of the audit process. Over time, there's been an investment in ensuring that internal audit and audit committees work. I'll give you an example. Wittenberg is one of those municipalities where there is strong leadership tone, where the municipal manager is involved in all areas of the audit, where the strong internal control is complemented by an effective internal audit function, as well as an effective audit committee. There's a culture of accountability in that municipality where there are problems, consequences, and corrective action does happen, so that on an ongoing basis, controls are improved and therefore outcomes are improved. So that's the story on the local government audits in terms of the general report. In the course of tabling this report, we also shared with the public as well as with Parliament the report on our audits, our proactive audits on the expenditures of COVID-19 relief funds in the municipal space. We conducted real-time audits, which allowed for real-time insights to be shared with accounting officers, which gave them the space to then apply corrective action quickly so that the ongoing expenditures are characterized by improvements. And we also shared this insight with councils and oversight. As I speak to this part of the report, you will probably identify pretty quickly that it is the same weaknesses that we report on in the context of the annual regularity audit that made it difficult for municipalities to avoid leakage, made it difficult for them to realize the objectives that were set in an efficient, cost-effective, and economical manner. So in terms of the specific audit, we started by sharing with municipalities some sense of the preventative controls that needed to be in place if effective, cost-efficient, and economical spend was to be the order of the day. We then audited expenditures as they were happening. So our audits have really covered the period up to the end of December 2020. And then we also reviewed information up to the end of March 2021. So the insights I will share with you cover what we've observed up to the end of March 2021. And to recap, in terms of what these expenditures were, 23 billion rand was availed for municipalities to spend on their COVID-19 response. And this was made through a combination of an equitable share of 11 billion rand, of conditional grants that could be repurposed, as well as a municipal disaster relief grant. Through the repurposing and the expenditures on the additional equitable share, as well as the municipal disaster relief grant, ultimately 16.765 million rand was a billion rand was made available. So 16.7 billion rand was made available for these expenditures. At the time that we concluded our review work for up until the end of March 2021, 7.1 billion rand of the 16.7 billion rand had been spent. So our work really covers 42% of the expenditures that were available for this response. We looked at expenditures at 43 municipalities. We would have loved to do it for everybody. However, time and resource constraints made it such that we had to be selective in where we concentrated our efforts. So we looked at 43 municipalities, and we looked at municipalities right across the country. So there was no concentration on any one province. We also audited transactions and expenditures relating to infrastructure projects, to PPE, as well as to a number of other services, which I'll talk to in a minute. The preventative controls that we shared with the accounting officers at the beginning of this project were similar to what the National Treasury shared with the same accounting officers in the form of the circular that they issued. And what we also focused our eye on was that spending on equitable share was to be consistent with the provisions of the National Treasury Circular number 108 and the guidance as per the 2020 supplementary budget, which set out an expectation that funds were to be spent on the response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Municipalities were given the space to maintain existing services despite a temporary decline in revenue and to cover expenses incurred in response to the pandemic. So when we looked at these expenditures, we cast our minds to whether or not these monies were going towards this intention. After 11 billion rand of the equitable share that was available, 4 billion rand had been spent as at the end of March. When we looked at the information that was provided to us by municipalities, it was clear that of the 4 billion rand, 2.7 billion rand, that's 68% of it, that had been spent in areas that had nothing to do with the intended direction. So out of the 4 billion rand of equitable share, which was supposed to have been spent on the COVID-19 response, and to maintaining services in the context of diminishing revenues, what municipalities shared with us was that they spent monies on operational expenditure, they spent monies paying for bulk purchases, water, boards and Eskom, they spent monies on salaries, and in some instances on other things. So what we find here is that it's a story about financial health of municipalities, where even though funds have been set aside for this particular purpose of responding to the pandemic, they were then used to top up other expenditures that were obviously under pressure. So for us, it's really a story about financial health of municipalities. We conducted this work using a set of teams with multidisciplinary expertise. So we had our regularity auditors, let's call them the financial auditors, complemented by our colleagues that are specialists in health, specialists in infrastructure, so our engineers, our quantity surveyors, as well as specialists in information systems audits and specialists in forensics audits. So the type of insights we can share with you are those gleaned from having applied this type of effort to the audit program, so that you benefit from the input of different expertise through the audit effort. There were some limitations when we conducted this work. Some of the municipalities were unable to provide us with supporting documentation for their expenditures and for their procurement. Now, this is concerning because we were conducting real-time audits, so there was a very short space of time between the expenditure and us asking for that documentation. We also found, fortunately, the good news is that a number of accounting officers received our work well, and they implemented the type of corrective action that we would have desired to see, so which is a good thing, and we are hoping that all of us learn from this experience and emerge and build better going forward. I'll just share at a very high level some of the observations and findings relating to infrastructure, and then I'll talk about some of the other projects as well. What we found when we looked at projects relating to putting up quarantine sites, to putting up temporary shelters, water infrastructure, and to delivering water tanks, were that there was inadequate needs assessment and planning in place. We found that in some instances where shelters were put up, there was inadequate water and sanitation in those shelters or for the people that would be put into those shelters, which is really about coordinated implementation of some of these programs. We found instances of unfair and uncompetitive procurement processes resulting in higher prices or excessive or inflated prices being paid for what we were acquiring. We also saw that there was poor quality infrastructure in some places. That for us is a story about procurement practices, project management disciplines, and monitoring to make sure that whomever we've appointed as a supplier or contractor delivers as we expect, and that we do not pay until we are comfortable that we have received what is due to us. There were delays in completing projects. Again, a story about project management. Similarly, the story about poor workmanship when water tanks were being installed is about project management and contractor management. there were some instances where payments were made without proof of delivery, which is one of those basic disciplines that we talk about when we deal with financial management practices and the need to ensure that the scarce public resources that are available to us are being used in a way that's going to deliver value for citizens. And I've spoken about funds not being used for the intended purpose, which is a story about financial health in many instances. When we looked at PPE, this will sound familiar because it's similar to what we shared when we looked at the PPE procurement in provincial and national government, which we issued in the report that we tabled back in December of last year. And it's also consistent with what we keep talking about around procurement practices and how goods and services are actually being procured in local government. So the story is very similar. These disciplines resulted in PPE being short or excessive in some places where, because we don't do a proper needs assessment and we don't plan properly, sometimes PPE ends up in the wrong place and not where it should. We underbuy or overbuy. Because of poor procurement processes, wrong suppliers were chosen. There were red flags identified in terms of potential fraud, which needed to be followed up by those municipalities. We also still found that awards were made to officials that were employed by the state. Because of these poor procurement practices, we still found that the quality of what was delivered left much to be desired in some instances. The price that was paid was higher than what was determined by the National Treasury as the appropriate market-related rates. And we also found that delivery was not always on time. It was not always at the right place and at the right quantity. Really about discipline around how do we procure and set ourselves up for success in terms of paying the right price for the right quality and getting the goods we desire at the right place at the right time. In terms of how PPE that was now procured was ultimately stored and utilized, the stock management processes that were ineffective in a number of municipalities resulted in PPE being managed poorly, such that the quality was compromised and the ability to get the full benefit of what we paid for was not where it should be. Security at storage facilities was not always up to scratch, and as a result, PPE, which is highly in demand at this time, would have been at the risk of being lost. And we also found that this was prevalent where even high-value PPE items were actually involved. For us, again, it's a story about practices that allow for proper controls, proper discipline, and proper monitoring. In relation to other goods and services, we looked at sanitation services, we looked at water tankering services, and we also considered whether or not there were instances of COVID funds not being used as what had been desired. Same story about lack of planning and needs assessment. We found that the water distribution was happening at inflated prices. There were instances where we found that there were red flags for fraud, and we referred those to law enforcement to investigate, and in some instances directly to the accounting officers for them to investigate. Were not filled, so the water tank is there, it's properly installed. The coordination of the efforts to make sure that somebody's there to fill it, such that the intended beneficiaries get access to water as what was designed, that coordination was not in place. And as a result, the ability of citizens to benefit out of this initiative was compromised. And if I move on to the summary of this story around the audits of COVID-19 expenditures in local government, we found that it's really still about the same disciplines around procurement, contract management, around ensuring that where there are projects in place, there is proper monitoring throughout the course of the project. As I indicated, we've provided recommendations to municipal managers, and in many instances, they are taking those on and are implementing them. What we believe is that it's important that we learn from this experience and, as I say, build better, because resources need to be spent in a way that's economical and efficient. And when you've got a scenario where every rand is precious and the demands and wants of citizens are heightened, it's critical that we be disciplined around how we spend every public rand. I will now, Chairperson, move on to the third part of my input, the third and last part of my input, which is really dealing with the material irregularities process. And I'm aware that a number of honourable members have particular interest in this, because it was Parliament that saw it fit to have the Audit Office add value into the process of driving consequence management within the public sector. And we see this instrument as positioning us to work in a complementary way with other role players. We don't take over the responsibility of accounting officers, neither do we take over the responsibility of council or of legislators. Ours is to use the audit work that we have to highlight those that need urgent attention and to follow up on whether or not the accounting officer is doing what is necessary, what is adequate and appropriate to indeed deal with the irregularity we've identified. So material irregularity is non-compliance, contravention of law, any fraud or theft, or even a breach of a fiduciary duty, which we identify during our audit. And one that has resulted or is likely to result in material financial loss, result in misuse or loss of a material public resource, or cause substantial harm to an institution in the public sector, or even substantial harm to the general public. So that's the definition of a material irregularity. Whereas in the course of our audit, we would issue an irregular expenditure finding, a non-compliance, which would be then documented as irregular expenditure. And we would give the accounting officer the responsibility to then act in accordance with law and investigate the matter, identify whether there's been an illegality and report that to law enforcement, identify if it's a training issue for their staff or a discipline issue for their officials, and make sure that that happens, identify if there is loss, stem that loss, and make sure that whatever control fails is fixed so that the matter does not recur. I know that sounds familiar because I said earlier on, that's because that's what the irregular expenditure framework sets out, and that's what the MFMA requires of every accounting officer to do. We don't act unless they fail to do that. So this instrument says to the AG, where you found a non-compliance and you can see that it is resulting in financial loss, or it is likely to result in financial loss or harm to the institution, we want you to elevate your message by issuing a material irregularity notification to the accounting officer, which then says to them, accounting officer, this part of your non-compliance is resulting in this impact. We would want you to deal with it quickly. We give you 20 working days within which you must come back and tell us how you are going to deal with it. When the matter, when they respond, we would look at what their response is and whether or not it is adequate and appropriate. And if we believe that it is, we give them the opportunity to implement their plans, because they remain ultimately responsible and accountable in terms of how they are exercising stewardship over public funds. When we come back, we then will follow up and check whether they've implemented those actions in the way that they said they would. And if they have, we allow the matter to run its course. If they haven't, then we act. And we would act by, first of all, referring the matter for investigation, because in that instance, they would have either failed to do so or scoped the investigation such that it does not do what it's supposed to do. It is not adequate and appropriate response to the matter we raised. We would then refer it to one of the public bodies that's relevant to the matter for further investigation. We would then issue a recommendation which is stronger than the recommendation we give during the normal audit process. This one basically sets out clear actions with time frame where, in terms of what the accounting officer ought to do. That's another opportunity for them to act. So if they failed at the time that we gave the notification, we'll refer, investigate, and then we'll give them a recommendation. If they still fail to act on that recommendation, then we would take binding remedial action against that accounting officer because they have failed to implement these recommendations. If they then still do not honor that binding remedial action and do not exercise on the things we've set out, then we will go ahead and issue a certificate of debt. And that's what the law requires of us to do. And that certificate of debt goes in the name of the accounting officer because they would have failed to implement remedial action where financial loss has been involved. And they would have failed to act on something that they had optimal space and opportunity to act on. So by the time a COD, a certificate of debt, is issued, accounting officer has had multiple opportunities to take corrective action. And by the time the COD is given to them, it's really a recognition of failure on the part of the accounting officer and even on the part of those that supervise accounting officers to hold them accountable. Because if an accounting officer gets a material irregularity notification and they're either ignored or they do not set out adequate and appropriate actions on which to deal with it, and we end up referring the matter to a public body for investigation, it becomes a matter of public record. And the executive authority has every opportunity to hold that accounting officer accountable. So if the council, the mayor, becomes aware that there's an MI notification and the municipal manager is ignoring it, they should be stepping in and holding that accounting officer accountable, as set out in law. And by the time we're issuing recommendations and binding remedial action, that's a matter of public record. And there is no secret in terms of whether or not the MM is being held accountable by that council and even by that provincial legislature, because this information will be shared with them as well. So our role is to complement the work of others. And by the time we issue a certificate of debt, it really is an indication that there have been multiple failures across the accountability chain. The next slide sets out a few MIs that we've identified over the course of the last 2 years. We've been implementing these paths for 2 years. In the first year, we implemented quickly because the law became effective from the 1st of April 2019. So for the 2019 audit, we selected only 9 municipalities where we would implement these powers. And we had to select just the 9 to make sure that we can set out our processes properly as an audit office, make sure that we train our auditors properly, we prepare the accounting officers for what's coming, we establish the relationships that we must with the public bodies that work with us on this. So we had to prepare the ground for the implementation of these powers. So the year for 2020 is the first one where we implemented these powers across multiple municipalities, a total of 56 municipalities plus one entity. So 57 auditees were subjected to the MI process. In the course of these audits, we've identified and notified accounting officers of 96 material irregularities with an estimated financial loss of 2 billion rand. I'll talk about the first lot of disclaimers. So you may recall when I talked about disclaimer audit opinions earlier on, I talked about how an accounting officer, a municipal manager, has in law the duty to maintain full and proper records on how public funds are being spent. And their failure to do that is a breach of their duties as given in law. And the fact that a municipality continues to generate these disclaimer audit opinions results in substantial harm to the institution. It also results in harm to the public because most of these municipalities are characterized by dysfunction and by a lack of delivery on their intended mandate. and their financial position becomes more and more vulnerable. So we've issued a total of 21 material irregularities to municipalities that have got repeat disclaimer audit opinions. The problem is not the disclaimer audit opinion. The problem is what sits underneath it. First and foremost, being a breach of a duty given in law to the accounting officer to maintain proper and full records for their expenditures of public funds. And then others will then relate to other matters around the harm to the public, harm to the institution, and the vulnerability of their financial position. So what we are doing now is we are looking at the responses by those accounting officers, and then we will take further action based on our analysis of that response. Other MIs relate to procurement and payment cycles. So there are instances where we've issued MIs because a municipality has flouted their procurement process and ultimately issued a contract to somebody who charged them more than what the market was indicating that municipality should have paid. And so we estimated a loss of 2.5 million rand and issued an MI because that's lost to the public. Some of the matters relate to where there are payments being made for goods and services that were not received. There are invalid salary payments. There are instances where you've got ghost workers, where there's a story in one of the KZN municipalities of an official or somebody who's employed and they are on the payroll, but they've never set foot to show up and work. Now, if that accounting officer had set out internal controls that reconcile the wage bill on an ongoing basis, they would have picked this up. And if they had proper control to prevent this happening in the first place, it would not never have occurred. But then, as I say, if they had other controls, they would have been able to pick it up and take corrective action. So we will assess their response and see how they go about recovering monies that are being lost in this way. There are MIs that were issued in relation to interest and penalties that are paid to SARS, to water boards, to ESCOM, and other suppliers because payment is not being made on time. Yes, in some instances, it's really just about cash flow management. But what we're finding is that there are instances where municipalities enter into payment arrangements that they then don't honor. Payment arrangements with the supplier or the creditor, and then they don't honor them, and then they incur these penalties. That should be avoided. And so we believe that it needs attention, and that's why we've raised these MIs. And there are also instances where PAYE and VAT returns are not being paid on time, and that's obviously compromising the lot of the municipality, compromising the employees, and obviously SARS in terms of its ability to collect what's due. We found in terms of revenue management that where controls around billing are poor, there are properties that are not being billed for rates or for services, and that's a loss to the municipality. There are properties where they're underbilled, and again, that's a loss to the municipality. We've also found instances where debts are not being recovered actively, which is again a loss to the municipality. And these things can be avoided if disciplines and controls are strengthened. There were also instances relating to investments and assets. So investments related in the main to payments made to VBS Bank or deposits made to VBS Bank, and there was a loss. And there were actually transgressions of the prevailing prescripts where those investments were made. And so we've raised the MI. Around assets not being safeguarded, so some of the examples are where you've got, let's say, a water treatment plant, as was the case in City of Tshwane, and it was not being secured properly. And then the asset itself was now being vandalized. And our concern is that the failure to secure that asset or to keep it safe and safeguard it results in a maintenance and repair debt that someone is going to have to pay at some point. So we raise that in mind. The good thing is that in Tshwane, they've responded well. So they found the people who were vandalizing the equipment, and they've reported them to the police. and they've actually now secured those assets, which is what you want in terms of taking corrective action. As I indicated, a number of municipalities do respond when we raise these MIs. In Nelson Mandela Bay, one of the MIs we raised related to customers that were not being billed for interest that was due to the municipality. Having raised the MI, the system has now been corrected. The system that they work on has now been corrected so that the billing happens appropriately. Now, council is busy considering how to deal with the debt. So for us, what in kind is that level of responsiveness? And I see you coming through to the chair. I'll just do one more slide, which is the very, very last one. So if you can go to slide 27. Our message is really about saying, having looked at the regularity audit, having looked at the COVID expenditure, having looked even at the MI process, what is clear is that we need to build a capable administration for municipalities. And that's going to start with leadership. Critical that we have the type of leadership that's going to set the right tone at the top around ethical leadership, that's going to be setting the tone around service orientation, around a commitment to good governance, and a commitment to accountability. It also starts with that leadership that's elected to capacitate and stabilize the administration so that that administration benefits from professionals who have the space to do what they're supposed to do without undue political interference. We also believe that it's critical that that leadership sets up the administration and insists that the leadership of administration sets out a strong control environment, and that where problems arise, they are dealt with on an ongoing basis, and that they're dealt with consistently in an appropriate way, and that they are dealt with swiftly, so that we push back on the culture of impunity, we push back on a culture where there is a lack of accountability. So thank you very much for listening to me, and thank you for the opportunity to address the Honourable Member. Madam Chair, I then hand back to you.
Thank you, AG. I'm now handing over to Honourable Dotovu. Honourable Dotovu, over to you.
Yes, my apologies for that. I was locking on two gadgets so that I don't battle in terms of facilitating this part of the engagement. I was saying that the presentation was long but very, very necessary. It covered three most important aspects. The first one being the audit outcomes of the municipalities. The second one being the report on the PPE expenditure patterns of the municipalities. And lastly, the material irregularities. This was quite comprehensive and very, very good. And AG, we get always inspired to listen to what you say, the work that you do in terms of auditing the performance and the financial situation of the municipalities. And we thank you very, very much for that. The question is, how do we extricate our municipalities from the difficulties that they find themselves in? And I think as part of our work, our oversight work, both at national level and even in provinces, we need to talk about that so that at the end of the day, we strengthen oversight and indeed, in a more practical way, we change the situation that afflicting our municipalities. And as I said, thank you very much for that. I'm going to facilitate this session. This session is very, very straightforward. We are going to invite questions, comments, and inputs from honorable members of both the committees, the Appropriation Committee, as well as the COCTA Select Committee. but we are also going to equally invite provinces, members of the provincial legislatures in different provinces who we have invited this morning to be part of this important meeting, to also engage with the presentation of the Auditor General in that sense. If there is any other stakeholder, whether it's FFC, whether it's SALGA, all of you are invited and welcomed to make your inputs. Let's start. Who wants to take the first bite? Can you just raise your hand and note you in that sense? I note Honorable Ryder, I note Honorable Moletsane, I note Honorable Bongani, I think it's Bongani Baloi. I see those three hands. I see Honorable John PC and Honorable Willie Okamp. Let me start with the five hands that are there, and then we will see how it goes in terms of giving others the opportunities. Over to you, Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, my first point is going to be directed at the joint chairs of this meeting. And it's to point out that this exact presentation, well, I say exact, but there's been one or two very minor amendments to the presentation that was given on the 22nd of July, 2021, to the Portfolio Committee and the Auditor General, jointly, I think, and to say that, you know, this meeting is happening 3 months later. What's been presented to us today is old news. And I want to challenge, please, particularly my chairperson from the Appropriations Committee to say, in future, Chair, can we, if, you know, I'm not one that's a big fan of joint meetings across the two houses, but certainly very soon after that first presentation of the Auditor General, if not us getting that presentation first, because realistically, we are the house that is supposed to deal with local government matters. And certainly I think that this report should serve before the committees of the National Council of Provinces a lot sooner than 3 months after the media release and the first interrogation by the Standing Committee on Auditor General. So it's just to say, look, you know, it's 3 months later, we're dealing with old news. Let's try and deal with it a little bit more promptly next time, and perhaps we can look at the programming accordingly. That's my first comment, Chair. Thank you very much. Then I want to come to the actual contents of the presentation, and Ms. Molileke, thank you for the presentation. It was long, a little bit too long, I think, because it's limited our time to engage with it. But frankly, I think your department is, or the Auditor General certainly is doing a fantastic job and is internationally recognized. And I thank you for the work that you've done to date. And I ask you please to keep up the excellence that you've been doing. A couple of questions I have, a number of them, and I'm going to work through them at rapid fire if you don't mind. So the first one is an issue of overdraft. It's come to my attention that many municipalities are starting to get overdrafts through their bankers. And I want to know, is this prevalent? Is it something that that we're picking up a lot? Because I believe it's certainly not encouraged by Treasury, and it ends up resulting in kind of, you know, undetected government debt, which is not great. The next issue that I want to point out is the fact that unfunded budgets are coming forward repeatedly. Now, obviously, that's not something for the Auditor General's side of things, but certainly in terms of your role as the Auditor General, do you have any kind of oversight over the budgetary process as well? Certainly pointing out to people, you know, that comparing their actual performance against their budgets. Is that part of what you do? Chair, you're making us all seasick with that spinning image of you. But yeah, so comparing budgets to the actual audited outcomes, is there any kind of a benefit to doing that and to showing us, you know, certainly when we appropriate money as the Appropriations Committee, you know, we send money out there and then according to a budget that's been put to us. Now, it would be useful for us to see how the money is actually spent at the end of it. The next question I wanted to ask is the impact of MSCOA. I know MSCOA has been a difficult, tedious, and above all, expensive exercise. Have you seen a big benefit from MSCOA as the Auditor General? Has the benefit only accrued to Treasury, and has Treasury actually seen that benefit? I suppose you can't answer that. Then I want to point out particularly to the issue of non or late submission. I note that 22% of municipalities had are indicated on your slide as not having submitted yet, in spite of the fact that we are well down the track and we're actually awaiting the next round of results. Particularly, I want to point to the one in Gauteng who did not submit, because Gauteng is obviously on my heart as a representative from Gauteng, but Mfuleni. Mfuleni had not submitted theirs. And I noted as well that Northwest, the Northwest municipalities are serial offenders in terms of not submitting their audit outcomes. I want to point out that Mfuleni is currently under Section 139 administration. The majority, if not all of the municipalities in the Northwest, are also under Section 139 administration. So therefore, the failings to submit these things on time should actually vest with the provinces. And the fact that it's municipalities under administration that are not submitting their audit is a serious indictment on the provinces. And we actually need to start interrogating from both appropriations, but also from the perspective, what's going on? Why these interventions, the Section 139 interventions, are not working? And do we need to go to Section 145? That's the question. Just in terms of your comments about consultants being hired, is it worth, or is it something that you could do to red flag certain consultants, and also to maybe build in a skills transfer component to when a consultant is taken on and remunerated, that there's a requirement for some sort of skills transfer. You mentioned the skills deficit in municipalities, which I believe has a lot to do with carded deployments, but it also has a lot to do with the inability to attract excellent skills due to the toxic working environment that people are often finding themselves in. I think that's more of a comment than a question. Then, I think slide 11 was quite a sad story to tell. And, the regression over time, the fact that things are getting worse and worse and worse. And the next round, we're expecting to see even worse from what we're hearing. So the question that I have from that is, the AG was apparently given teeth in terms of the Public Audit Amendment Act. It was passed in 2018. That's three full cycles that we've gone through where you've had the ability to use this. I think it was last year that we were told that there were six trial cases where the AG was trying to implement its new teeth and use the Public Audit Amendment Act. Now, I noted your comments about what you can do towards the end of your slide and what you were going to do, etc. But what has happened? How have you used the Public Audit Amendment Act over the last 3 years? What have you seen as the results of it? Does the Public Audit Amendment Act require a little bit more fine-tuning? Are there more teeth that you require? How can we help you to do your job, Auditor General? I also wanted to say that we need to celebrate the improvements where there have been improvements, but specifically, Chairperson, the key findings on infrastructure and also on the goods and services. I found those two slides particularly important. And I do think that Treasury, if Treasury is on, needs to comment on those key findings, because I believe a memo needs to go out from Treasury highlighting those key findings and proposing corrective actions in terms of those. The fact that there's poor planning, the fact that these things are not happening, the fact that there's overspending, that we're not getting value for money, this is exactly what our communities, what our residents, what our citizens are complaining about, that the local government is ineffective and ineffectual. So perhaps a memo needs to go out directing municipalities to start using those key findings to preemptively plan and get things right. And then to just my very last point is to point out the fact that we have a serial do-gooder on this meeting, Councillor Bongani Baloyi from Minval, 7 successive clean audits. I think we should all learn how he gets it done. There's my commemorative mug with my name on it from 2015 to show that I was part of that one. But Councillor Baloyi, I think, needs to be congratulated. He's on the today representing Selga, but to say, you know, very well done, and we can all certainly learn from you. Well done, Bongani. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. Honourable Members, I see the queue is very, very long, and I don't like suppressing views of Honourable Members, but please, as you engage, be wary and cautious to that particular fact, and so that we, without losing quality of the debate and the discussion and the questions, just please, as you ask questions, consider that. The next one is Honorable Moletani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me apologize for not switching on my video. I've got a challenge with the network where I am now. Then, before I ask the question, let me acknowledge the presentation. What I want to find out from the Auditor General is that Masilonyana Municipality failed to submit their financial statement for 3 years. Maluti Municipality failed to submit their financial statements for 2 years. Now, I just want to check on, is there any consequence management that was recommended against the two municipalities? If yes, has the Auditor General made a follow-up to make sure that the recommendations were implemented? Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you very much. Councillor Bongani Baloyi.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible, Chair?
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to make some brief remarks from Selga pertaining to the AG report. Sorry. Selga has noted the AG general report for 2019-20 financial year. And it has indicated an overall regression in comparison to the previous financial year results, mainly due to 57 audits, which were not finalized by the cutoff date set by the AG for their general report. For audits which were finalized by the general report, Chair, we also noted that there was a net improvement in audit outcomes of about 30 municipalities with better audit outcomes compared to the prior financial year. And in Limpopo, there's about 8 municipalities, and in the Eastern Cape, about 6 municipalities, being the two provinces with the greatest net improvement in municipal audit compared to the prior financial year. In addition, Selga would like to congratulate all the municipalities who have achieved a consistent performance, which is quite important in the context that we find ourselves here today. It also is also noteworthy that while the number of municipalities who achieved unqualified audit opinions with findings or even better outcomes is 116 out of 257 municipalities, or which could be 45% of all municipalities. The expenditure budget under the management represents about 77% of the overall local government expenditure budget. This is a clear reflection that even when there are challenges with financial management, local government is not completely dysfunctional in financial management if 77% of local government sphere expenditure budget is under the control of municipalities who at the very least attained financial and qualified audit opinions. These outcomes call for a concerted effort in intensifying and applying good governance, accountability, and consequence management to set local government back on the upward trajectory, wherein the sphere is progressive, developmental, and at the forefront of acceptable standards and quality of service delivery. The AG also reflects the deteriorating financial health of municipalities, casting significant doubt on the ability to continue as an ongoing concern in 57 municipalities. This increasing trend places local government in a vulnerable position and is reflected in infrastructure maintenance backlogs coupled with service delivery backlogs and failure. On average, 63% of municipal debt have been assessed as irrecoverable, while 49% of municipalities have outstanding creditors that are greater than the available cash at the end of the year. SALGA continues to engage the stakeholders, including the National Treasury, with protocols on reviewing the fiscal framework in order to assist municipalities to improve their financial health. The National Executive met on the 24th of June to make the following recommendations on the basis of the report tabled before us today, which was given to us by the AG, to make two fundamental recommendations. The first one, which I'm communicating with yourselves, to communicate directly with the mayors and accounting officers of municipalities who have transgressed in terms of the relevant legislation in order to demand that accountability and consequence management must be extracted and actioned. Set number two, to communicate directly with mayors and accounting officers of municipalities to advise them not to unnecessarily and extensively utilize consultants, but to rather capacitate their own internal staff to be able to undertake the work. And SALGA to intensify financial management capacity building efforts so as to assist in reducing reliance on accountants. And to add to this point, Chair, we find it unacceptable that R1 billion can be used to prepare financial statements, and yet in those very financial statements, you have material statements. And it's quite important to ensure that these monies are paid back because there was no value at all derived from this. And Chair, we denounce and call out all the acts of blatant criminalities, such as was reported by AG in their special audit on the COVID-19 funds, and the AG to be formally requested to report back to NEC on cases involving these criminalities. Chair, we also publicly welcome and support the call for the AG for municipalities to apply preventative controls, and SALGA will also highly encourage the application and use of AG as a preventative control mechanism. And some of these resolutions above are a reaffirmation of the prior year's NEC resolution. And SALGA did communicate in writing to municipal managers who attained disclaimer audit out opinions, adverse opinions, and whose audits are not finalized after the prior year audit outcomes were released. The response by affected municipalities to SALGA's communication directly or directing them to extract accountability and consequence management went largely unheeded, and this was really extremely disappointing. And SALGA is therefore intensifying its resolve to extract accountability from the relevant executives and councils and to ensure that consequence management from affected municipalities who do not exercise accountability and consequence management, and we will work with stakeholders who have the legislative power to do so. In this regard, SALGA calls on the National Treasury to apply Section 216 of the Constitution against municipalities who do not exercise accountability and consequence management. Chair, I think I'll pause there, and we are available to take questions if there are, which would be directed specifically to SALGA about our role and what we have done to support municipalities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Baloyi. The next speaker on the line is Honorable Mpisi, John Mpisi, followed by Honorable Willie Okamp.
Now, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chair, from my side, first let me thank you for inviting us as the province to come and participate in this session. And we want to welcome the report by the AG. Chair, there is a statement uttered by the AG when she started quoting what the former AG, the late AG Makwetu, may his soul rest in peace, that that statement is loaded in that it was actually cautioning us as the lawmakers that we should be able to say things that were said by the AG then must have been respected by ourselves particularly at the level of the municipalities. Unfortunately, that was not done. And as a result of that, the situation has become worse. The situation has not actually changed from that situation. And I want us to relook at that particular statement and say to ourselves that if our municipalities are not going to change the way they do things, definitely we are going to lose what we are trying to achieve as lawmakers working together with the government. The second thing, Chair, is the issue of consequence management. I'm chairing the Portfolio Committee of Finance in the Gauteng province. And I can tell you, Chair, we met with all of our municipalities from Thursday last week until yesterday. The situation is not good. And we want to congratulate Midval, regardless, let's put politics aside. And we want to congratulate Midval for achieving for 7 conservative good audit outcomes. And they are doing that consistently. And we said that they have to share this with not only with the municipalities in Gauteng, but nationally at the level of SALGA and at this level where Mayor Baloyi has just spoken about. Now, my situation, Chair, is that I am worried that municipalities are struggling to get revenue or recover revenue from the communities as part of the rentals and as part of the services that they give to our people. But municipalities that are very, very poor, they will go out and hire a service provider to do debt collection, to prepare statements, financial statements, and so on, with huge amounts of money. And yet they can't deliver service to our people using that particular money. Like when you ask the accounting officers who are municipal managers and their political principals, there's no response, Chair, that is coming out from our own leaders in those municipalities, holding their MMs accountable and their CFOs. The rot that exists, Chair, at the level of the SCM is actually shocking, because you can then realize that this is now a culture that at some point we must actually nip it in the bud. Now, I want to ask the Auditor General that now the law that has been changed and given powers to the Auditor General, having that we have identified, what is the Auditor General going to do? What is the Auditor General going to do to make sure that those that are on the wrong side of the law are actually dealt with, arrested if need be, or removed from the position which they hold? And until such time that we do that, we are not going to win this battle where our people really will continue to suffer. There's no delivery, there's no development in the areas. And yet, year in, year out, we vote for this budget, and these budgets are given to our different municipalities. The grants that have been given to the municipalities are not being utilized as the grants that are supposed to be utilized for the reasons that they are given for. And this is a problem. The intervention also by COCTA at the level of national and the province, working together with the municipality, I don't think there is a clear understanding. There is a clear understanding by the municipalities at the level where they can accept the intervention by COCTA national and provincial. Because all the time when that is done, municipalities, they see the intervention as an intervention of a big brother trying to call on the younger brother to order. And I'm saying that from where I'm sitting, Chair, we have to find a way of making sure that there is accountability, there is a political leadership provided at those in those municipalities. I was saying yesterday to the MEC that, you know, my fear is one, we are now going to the local government elections, and majority of our municipalities are now going to hand over municipalities to the new administration with a poor state of an affairs. And I can tell you, we are dealing with 2019-20, Chairperson Dotovu. And I can tell you that come 2020-21 report, which is currently under audit, we are still going to see the worst out of it. The last one, Chair, is the issue of the budget that has been rushed now to be spent before the close of this term of office for the councillors. And if we are not going to be careful, there will be a lot of corruption that will go to happen. And we want to request that the Auditor General must actually put an eye on this particular term, because we know that there's going to be a lot of challenge around these issues. And we are pleading that let us manage those resources and let us make sure that we check each and every accountability. There must be consequences to the accounting officers themselves, because they are the one who must take full responsibility. Politically, the mayors must also take responsibility for the wrongdoing that is happening there. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Please, Honorable Willie Okam, you will be followed by Honorable Griso. And lastly, Honorable Cheney.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, one of the advantages of having the Honorable Ryder as one's colleague on a committee like this is that whenever he asks questions, he covers most of the bases. So thank you, Mr. Ryder. You have covered me in most of the instances. Honorable Chairperson, I've got two additional points. The one point I want to come and carry on where the Honorable MPC and Molisani left off with regards to consequence management. And I'm very glad that we are on the same page when it comes to the importance of consequence management. Consequence management is the one thing that we, whenever we've got these meetings, consequence management comes up. But it seems to me that the same people remain in their positions, and although consequence management are implemented in some instances, there's no effect on the officials that made the mistakes that led to the consequence management. Let's take one example. Municipalities that does not use their MIG grants, their municipal infrastructure grants, properly, they get penalized because of the fact that they either misspent or underspent those budgets. And one of the consequences thereof is that municipality not getting the same amount of money the next year. In other words, it is the municipality as a whole, and then directly the communities that are being punished, that are getting consequences for the mismanagement of their finances by officials. So the question is, what are being done with regards to getting consequence management to those officials directly, and not only to the municipalities, and then directly or indirectly then the communities that must pay the brunt again for the mismanagement of individuals? If we want to be serious about what we must do in municipalities, we must be serious in getting rid of people that are mismanaging the finances of our people. If we look at those municipalities where clean audits are received, I can promise you, those are the municipalities that will not tolerate any actions of any official that is irregular. They will get rid of those officials. It should not be the communities that pay the brunt for the mistakes made by officials. So we would like to see that. The second question that I've got, Honorable Chairperson, is it's something that more frequently comes to light, and all of us have got constituencies where we've got councillors that are
giving feedback to us or are contacting us with information and questions. And one of the things that I've picked up more and more in the last few months was the attempts from certain municipalities, maybe due to the fact that they are under increased financial stress, that they are trying on irregular basis getting rid of fixed assets. In other words, they want to sell property to increase the cash flow in their budgets. Now, firstly, we know that there's quite stringent processes when it comes to the selling or getting rid of fixed assets like the land and buildings, etc., and that it's a process to get rid of them. But it seems to me that people are rushing into getting rid of these fixed assets in order to increase their budgets because of the fact that mismanagement are taking place with regards to these fixed assets or with regards to these municipalities. Now, fixed assets must be sold for that. I want to ask the Auditor General, what are their findings in general with regards to the disposal of fixed assets by municipalities? Is it something that they see an increase of? And also, what is the situation with regards to the following of procedures when it comes to the disposal of fixed assets? Thank you very much. And Honorable Chairperson, with regards to the other stuff, I have been covered, so I'll keep it at that. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much, Honorable Ukam. Honorable Risa, followed by Honorable Kenny and Masangu. You will be the last, yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My apology not to switch on my video. I'm facing a network problem. But most of my points have been covered by honorable members. Safe to say, I want to add on three areas. I think one chair is on consequence management, which I think it also goes to the councils that are failing to play their consequence management as to the accounting officer, which is a serious a problem because most of the municipalities in the province, like the AG indicated, are on red. And it's a continuous practice, it's a culture of not accounting, no one is accounting, no consequence management. I think that's one area. The second one, Chair, is the area on finance unit. I think when you look on finance unit, you have officials that are put on finance unit who doesn't have capacity. Now, at some stage, you have a CFO who doesn't understand finances. Now you can't perform on that area if you have a CFO who doesn't have capacity, with the entire team, which is the finance, the BTOs that are there, who can't perform, who doesn't have the necessary skills. So there is a need for a skilled audit so that the correct people must be placed at that unit, which is critical. The additional one on that one, there is this culture of municipalities to appoint a consultant on 11th hour for just compliance. No record availed for those people to perform their duties, paying them a lot of money. And one honorable member raised the point of Section 139. You have a 139, the administrator with expect. So you have four, 139, consultant, the CFO, the BTO, but still the municipality fails to submit their annual financial statement. Really, Chair, we need to be serious on this point. The last point, Chair, is on material irregularities. I think in the province, one municipality was put as a pilot when the Act was after the amendment. There is a reputation, but there is no action up until now. I think appreciating the amendment, But AG, on the side of AG and law enforcement agency, more work must be done, because some of the people who are supposed to avail this information are the accounting officer who run amok, not to provide information and hide information up until they leave the municipality. So I think we must also look on that part. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Chair.
I think it's Kenny that must come in.
Ke kopa gore ke sa tsenya video because ha rena motlakase.
Okay.
I've got three questions to ask, but first of all, ne ke batla go bua ka taba ya municipality wa Hammanskraal Region 2 mo batho ba rona ba sena metsi. Metsi a teng a nkga masepa ga lwege. Then give a gift a little spirit municipality. The spirit is in the adult. Had he said, is Hongha, Masipa, Fella, in the Oteka,
Honorable Mutamai.
Yes. Yes.
Please mind your language. You are live on TV. South Africans don't want to listen to this kind of language you are projecting here. Please just talk properly.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. Ntwete tswa mo tsiriching. O di bona gore ke mantle, ke masepa ntwe e boemo. Hasi, I can't say gore ke papa e tshentsileng. You can come and see yourself.
Lord, so, check, can you call him to order? The language is terrible. No, can the comrade, can he withdraw? Can he withdraw, Chair? This language is terrible.
I'm chairing this meeting. Please respect the processes of the meeting and even the language you are using. You can't be talking like that even when I try to call you to order and you insist and say it in a different way. Please come properly stick to your point and withdraw that for your own interest and the interest of South Africans who are listening to you, please.
Okay, I withdraw, Chairperson. Mediamo Mfuleni Harai Jazza Modi Surichi. Ang.
Yes.
The question is about Ebuza, how many municipalities are being investigated on terms of Section 106 of the Municipality System Act. Place the list of the municipality investigated under Section 106 of the Municipality System Act. How many forensic investigations that have been completed and tabled at the Municipality Council and the NCOP? I thank you, Chair.
Okay, no, it's okay. I'm not sure whether we'll do the general answer some of those questions, but it's okay. We'll hear from her. The next two speakers is, let me give first Honorable Motswana. He's saying that he has been raising his hand, and I want you, Co-Chair, to be the last one to speak on this, please, if you don't mind. Honorable Motswana, over to you.
My apologies.
Your line is very terrible. Your line is very bad. The line
terrible.
Is bad.
Is it better now?
Yeah, it's better now.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. I wanted maybe just to proceed on where Honorable Deso left off. as the portfolio committee on the, in the Northwest, we note with serious concern the continued deterioration state of our municipalities. And it is true that the majority of these municipalities are municipalities under Section 139, 1B municipalities. Some of these municipalities, such as you're trying, the Sobota Madibeng has been under administration now for more than 7 years, to be precise, because if, some of the municipalities, even the period beyond 2016, they were still under administration. And a large chunk of money has been spent on trying to bring these municipalities up to scratch. And we note that there hasn't been considerable progress in this regard. Some of the municipalities, such as your trying to water, Rato has even deteriorated by two administrations, both politically and administratively, due to continued instabilities in those councils. And repeated concern or material irregularities concerning Madibeng, Chair. I want to emphasize that the portfolio committee has engaged with this presentation before, and repeatedly we have since convened this particular municipality. It is clear that there's this intended and deliberate attitude from municipalities not to act on the findings of the Auditor General. Consequence management, all the spheres of government are talking about it, and those that are vested with the responsibility of having to infuse that much needed political will from their side are found wanting, because in situations where in Madibeng you have the Auditor General saying there are people who are paying their DSTV and their closed accounts on the municipal bank accounts, it should not be a matter of having to procure to do any investigation, but rather just to act on those individuals that the Auditor General would have pointed out. But it is of a concern where the Northwest is sitting now in terms of the audit outcome. It shows, Chair, that we are the last and the West a performing province, and it is a concern to us. I just wanted to indicate those few words, Honorable Chair. Thanks.
All right, thank you very much, Honorable Motswana. Honorable Mahlangu.
There's Mkosi, Chair. I don't know if you would like to allow her.
Oh, yes. Okay, before that, Honorable Mkosi, you're on the line.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to your good self and the co-chair and other members that are present. Chair, let me not waste time. And firstly, I would like to apologize for not opening my video. Chair, one must welcome the detailed presentation made by the Auditor General. I want to share the same sentiment with my colleagues, that really it is a great concern that most of our municipalities are not performing very well. It's worse to those municipalities that are not even accounting for the monies that are granted to utilize. Yet the people outside there are crying out loud for the service delivery. But I think my colleagues have covered me when they are speaking of the consequence management, where we need to get exactly what has happened to such municipalities that are unable to account for the monies that are given to them. Lastly, Chair, I must also raise a great concern, because some of the municipalities, when the Auditor General present, she indicated that some of the municipalities are using the consultants. I don't know how are we going to deal with these issues of the consultants that are being used from the municipalities, because when you look at the consultant issues, they are taking a lot of monies of the municipalities. So I think we need to look at it very, very serious, the issue of the consultants, that we must not utilize. The municipalities must move away from using the consultants. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
All right, thank you very much, Honorable Nkosi. Honorable Dikeledi Mafang.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation from the AG. We're very much so welcome. But also before I come, I start with my input or my questions. Honorable Ryder, when you started speaking, you said to challenge me and as the chairperson of the appropriations. And I've always, since we started, having, encouraged the teamwork. I think instead of you challenging me, you should propose or recommend to the committee. So that it's a resolution of the committee, and the chairperson will do what she's supposed to do, instead of single out in the chairperson and say you challenge him. You can challenge me on other things outside here, but I prefer us to work as a team here in the committee. Chair, I saw Honorable Makaringa and Honorable Mashangu from the legislature, Nora Mashangu, and Comrade, Honorable Nkosi, we have a serious challenge there on slide 8, where the stressful and challenging municipalities are being identified under Mpumalanga. All these municipalities are in one district. You have spoken only about Lekwa, because I think maybe Lekwa is the worst. It's Lekwa, Dipaliseng, Governing Begi, and Dr. Pikika Isakasen. And all these municipalities are at Kharsibande district. So I think it's a bad cause for the members of the legislature, and it sends a serious message to us. Can you go to slide 14? On 14 again, you're talking about the messages. I think I looked also on the performances of these three provinces that you have identified. And one is asking, going back to the questions that have been asked by the members about the accountability, about the effectiveness of the performance by the municipalities. It's a very worrying situation, very stressful situation. And I spoke to my colleagues from Mpumalanga, we are one of those. I know it's a continuation from the previous slide. The other issue that gives me nightmares, and I've been talking about this. While I'm talking about this, Lubabalo, go to slide 20. About consultants, members have spoken about it. I'm worried that there's no value for money. And because of what members have raised, lack of consequence management, we find ourselves over and happens while there are people who are employed in the municipality and are paid, and then they come to work on daily basis. So there's double expenditure. There's unlawful or fruitless expenditure, if one can say that. It's not acceptable. Why do we have to pay somebody money and he or she cannot do the work, and we must get a consultant to come and do work on your behalf? And these consultants, as and when they come, because it looks like they are called on frequent basis or on yearly in some of the municipalities, what are they learning from those consultants? Because I think after they've left, you should have learned something from them. They can't pay it for nothing. But I'm more concerned about the officials of the municipalities. There's an item that you spoke about, and you gave an example about Northern Cape, that the practice in Northern Cape is that before the financial statements and the reports are being given to the Auditor General, the provincial government plays a role. But also I want to come in to say, what is the role, or do we have the internal auditors of the municipalities? Because they need to verify, they need to play a role also in terms of assisting the municipalities. So while we rely on, we have to learn from what Northern Cape is doing, but the internal audit committees, the internal auditors, what is it that they're doing if they don't verify the quality of the information that is being sent to the Auditor General? On this one of the PPEs, if we have low quality of PPEs being delivered, the prices are questionable, and all those things, there are red flags in terms of the fraudulent expenditures or other things. And when you were presenting, Memalulek, you said you usually will give or expect the municipality to follow up on these. I know that you have been given the responsibility or the powers to can act, not just identify this and recommend, but to act. But also, your acting is up to a level of a debt certificate. It's a process up to a level of a debt certificate. So I want to know if, is it not possible that because we can't rely, if the municipality has done all these things and we say the municipality must follow on these things to correct them when there is a element of a fraudulent exercise, I think we need to report to the relevant authority or an organization that needs to do or has the quality of doing investigation and findings. And those findings must have teeth at the end of the day. The last thing that I would like to raise, Honorable Co-Chairperson, I have many things that I wanted to raise. And taking into consideration what Honorable Dennis has raised, and which I really think is a matter for the committee. You know, at times, and it's not for the first time I raised this, you'll find that there are departments or municipalities that have clean audits, for several years. But then, the question that I have to the AG, how are you making it possible to see that the outcome or the audit outcome, the clean audit, speaks to service delivery? Because my belief, maybe it's because I'm not an auditor myself, I'm talking from a layman's point of view as a citizen, as a concerned citizen. You might hear that my municipality has a clean audit, and that might be because the consultant or whoever is responsible was able to play with numbers. But when you go to the ground, the outcome base, the outcome focus, it's talking something else. When you go to the ground, you find that the service delivery is very poor. It does not speak to the financial performance. So how do we marry the two? Thank you, Co-Chairperson. I'll leave it at that, and the other questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable. I'm at home again. From Ryan, give a blessing.
Language. You are my chair. Yes, we can hear you.
Without wasting any time, can I invite the Auditor General to respond to the questions? And in that response, I'm sure it can be good that the Auditor General locates the relationship between the Office of the Auditor General with the law enforcement agencies. What role do they play when they can see these blatant irregularities taking place at municipal level, financial misconduct, the question of PPE procurement and expenditure patterns? How do they relate with the law enforcement agencies to can tackle this particular problem? Over to you, Ms. Thakane Maluleke, and your team, in the way that you want to respond to the questions and inputs by honorable members.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and I'd like to thank all of the honorable members for their contributions and challenging questions. I'll respond to the questions and the comments I will leave to be, and I've noted your last one. I'll end with it, Honorable Chair Dodovu. Let me start with the questions from Honorable Ryder. The matter of overdrafts, why do some municipalities have overdrafts? We have found only 4 municipalities had overdrafts as at the end of June 2020. The real issue we keep raising is about expenditure that is higher than revenues available, about a net deficit that's registered on the income statement, so that, as I say, income is less than expenditure. And what then happens is that they run up creditors' bills. That's why, instead of having an overdraft, a number of municipalities will owe creditors a lot of money and not be able to pay it, because they keep incurring expenditure but not paying for it. And then in terms of why they have cash flows to do what they need to do during the year, remember they get this allocation from the national fiscus, so they actually have cash on hand. And what they do, instead of having an overdraft at the end of the year, they end up with creditors that build up. And I hope that's clear. Do we have oversight on unfunded budgets as the AGSA? No, we don't. We just report on it at the end of the year. Remember, the audit process happens at the end of the year, so once transactions have happened, not at the point of approving budgets. That remains in the hands of the council, as set out in the Constitution and in the MFMA. In terms of how do we see how money is spent, in terms of the ones that have disclaimer audit opinions, the lack of transparency and accountability for these funds is exactly why we've raised the matter around disclaimer audit opinions, especially the repeat disclaimers, and exactly why we have even issued the MIs where we deemed it to be necessary. On MSCOA, as the AGSA, we've not seen a big benefit. So the question around whether Treasury sees a benefit, I think, is best answered by the Treasury. And then on Gauteng Emfuleni, yes, Emfuleni was submitted by the 31st of October as required, but it was completed later than our cutoff for reporting purposes. We've subsequently completed that audit, and it has a qualified audit opinion. It is an auditee, that, a municipality that's under the administration by the provincial government. And I think one of the reasons for the delay in completing the audit is the difficulties of working through the administrator, who doesn't always enjoy the committed input from the and support from the officials within the municipality. So that's the story about Emfuleni. It's under administration, and it has a qualified audit opinion, which we've issued subsequent to the cutoff. Northwest, I think that was a comment and a question about why these municipalities that are under administration end up with late or non-submissions. I guess you wanted to pose it to the provincial government. On consultants, you know, I agree with you. It's important to have the expectation that there be a skills transfer from the consultant to the people employed in the municipality. We've looked at this question as to why there is no evidence of skills transfer. One of the issues is that the type of work that the consultants do is really the basics. It's trying to put together financials because there's been neglect of attending to those things during the course of the year. And what that tells you is that the issue is not one about people who are available and have the base skills that the consultants can then top up, but rather it's about not being able to do the basics during the course of the year. So even if we have the provisions in the contracts with consultants, for as long as we're not using them appropriately, and for as long as the people employed in the finance unit don't have the skills and the disciplines to do the basics, we're not going to get it right. You asked a question about the Public Audit Act amendments and how long it's been in force. The law became effective on the 1st of April 2019. When we conducted the audits that we're talking about now, which are for the year ended June 2020, it was the second cycle where we were applying these powers. The first phase, which was the initial phase of implementing these powers, we looked at 9 municipalities as part of the pilot and us making sure that we can implement this instrument appropriately, prepare the ground as well as prepare our team. So this cycle that we are reporting on to you now is the first one where we've had 56 municipalities and 1 municipal entity subjected to these powers. What have we done with them? Where there have been material irregularity notifications that go undealt with, we've referred matters to the Hawks. For example, in Machabeng, we got a response from the municipal manager which didn't give us comfort that they were applying the appropriate and adequate processes to deal with the irregularity. So we've referred the matter to the Hawks. And that's consistent with the MOU that we have between ourselves and the Hawks, similar to what we have with a number of other law enforcement agencies. In Nelson Mandela Bay, I gave you an example where they actually responded well. So there's no need for us to take the matter forward, because at least the responsiveness has resulted in, 1, stemming the loss, because they fixed the system, so there's no loss going forward. And 2, the council is now going to make a decision about whether to go and get the money back, which is fine, it's a council decision. But for us, the win is not about pursuing a matter to a COD necessarily. It's about whether or not you get the accounting officer to sort out the problem and recover losses. I'll give you an example of another loss where that has been recovered. So in Mogalakwena, we issued a material irregularity notification because there was construction work on Moshade Stadium, a project in the municipality. And when we issued the MI, because we found that there was an overpayment of 13 million rand, a financial loss of 13 million rand because of a lapse in controls in that municipality. We issued the MI. The accounting officer has responded well. They've gone and investigated, completed the investigation. They've taken disciplinary action against the officials that were responsible, and they've put a legal process in place to go and get the money back. So again, we don't have to pursue a COD or remedial action because there's been responsiveness. Ours is to follow up on whether or not the money comes back. So that's what we've done with these powers. I've given you an example of what we did at the city of Tshwane, and I'll give another example. Where in Ngakamudiri Mulema, here we had three MIs issued. That accounting officer basically ignored us. They didn't follow up in terms of giving us a proper response. And so what we're going to do now is what we've done now is we've issued a recommendation which has got very clear terms that on what it is they must do and by when. In fact, we've given them a deadline of the 1st of October 2021. To implement the actions that are necessary in this instance. If they do not do it, then we will escalate to a material to a remedial action. I'm giving you these examples as part of feedback so that you don't see just statistics, but you get some real live examples of how we are using these powers. And I'm hoping that Honorable Mpisi, that's answering part of the questions that you raised about these amendments. Our role is to use them to not just drive the punitive aspects, which is important, and we will do it without any fear, without any favor, because you have to, that's what the law requires of us. But what we also want to drive is to get accounting officers to fix systems and to fix going forward so that we stem losses and we avoid repetition. Honorable Mpisi, while I'm with the comments you made, you talked about us keeping an eye on resources given the transition that's going to happen with these elections coming up. You know, we'll do our part. The challenge is that an audit by its nature can only happen after somebody's done something. The nature of an audit is that you look at a transaction that has already happened. So your ability to avoid a transaction happening is quite limited. So whilst we will do what we need to do, it's critical that we get the leadership of the municipality to execute on their duty with the ethical conduct that the Constitution demands of us, with a respect for their duties as set out in the MFMA, and that they be held accountable when they don't do the necessary. So I hope that helps. You were asking about even the response, the relationships that we have with law enforcement agencies. And I know, Honorable Dodobu, you also asked me to talk about this. We've set up MOUs with a number of law enforcement agencies and investigative bodies. And what we do is we share information with them once we've done some work. So if you look at what we did when we looked at the PPE investigation, we shared our risk assessments as well as the databases that we had interrogated, the red flags that we were concerned about, and we handed that to the Fusion Center, which has as its components a number of law enforcement agencies. Out of that, the FIU was able to take the matter forward and work within their proclamation to investigate PPE transgressions, and you've seen the matters come to pass in the public domain. The Hawks were able to do their bit, and they've actually had people in the dock, specifically around the findings that we have had on UIF, where there were inappropriate payments, as well as on SASA, where there were fraudulent activities. So what we're experiencing is that beyond even sharing or referring matters, as we've done with the Hawks in Machabeng, there is also a great opportunity for us to collaborate even better with the law enforcement agencies. And we are embracing it, having learned and seen the impact of it in the context of our special reports on the COVID-19 expenditures. So that's how we are working with them. You might not see the AG put people in jail because that's not what we do. But what you will see is the impact of us working hand in glove with the people whose responsibility it is to drive law enforcement. Honorable Ogam, the conversation you were driving around some councils selling off fixed assets, We haven't seen this, but I think it's a good thing for us to look out for in the context of the 2021 audit that we are currently working on. My colleagues are on the platform and they're listening, so I'm sure they'll take it up. But what I would want to highlight is that at the end of the day, our concern will be about whether or not the law was followed and whether or not the council executed on its duties as given in law. Because ultimately, it is the council that holds the primary responsibility for running the municipality. The MFMA Section 135 is particularly clear on this. So we've got to look at all times to the council to make the right decisions that are about building capability, that are about an administration that acts with prudence and that executes on its duties in a manner that's consistent with the provisions of Section 195 of the Constitution. I'm now going to skip a few comments because many of them I agree with. We've got to strengthen the skills base in finance units and in other components of the municipalities. The example we raise about the use of the inappropriate use of consultants for financial reporting. You know, the principle could be stretched to looking at what happens in the engineering field, what happens in other parts of the responsibility that a municipality has. Is there still inappropriate outsourcing when people are employed? And if that's the case, then let's stem it and make sure that we get value for money and we build capability for those institutions of faith. Honorable Muzamayi, the question you ask about Section 103 of the MSA and the investigations, I'm unable to offer an answer. I don't know the answer to your question. We don't look at that. It may well be that the MEC for COCTA would have it because our reading of the MFMA would require of them to have that information, similar with the National COCTA. They would have that information that would be available to yourself as parliamentarians. I'm going to jump to Honorable Masangu, my chair for the meeting, joint chair for the meeting. The point you make about the role of provincial government, so I'll start by clarifying. The example was of what we saw in the Western Cape, not the Northern Cape, the Western Cape. But your point is valid. You've got to have internal audits and audit committees that are functional within each municipality. The MFMA is very clear on the need for the accounting officer to set up a system of control and to set up a functional internal audit unit and to ensure that it has the right resources to support them in executing on their duties as accounting officers. Similarly, they've got to set up an accounting an audit committee. So the support of a provincial government doesn't replace what the internal audit and audit committee can and should do during the course of the year to make sure that there is credible performance information, credible financial information, and that there are adequate controls to prevent and to detect any instances of non-compliance with key laws and regulations. So what I'm saying is it's not either or, it's both. So the provincial government will come right at the end of the chain as part of support, but it doesn't step in to fill a gap where there isn't an internal audit or an audit committee that is giving the right level of assurance. We've got to strengthen the internal audit functions in government. I think Honourable Chair, then the one about clean audits and service delivery. It's always a question that comes up. We don't audit whether or not services have been delivered in totality. A clean audit outcome tells you whether the very first part of accountability and transparency has been met. Because if a municipality is at least able to show what they've done with the funds available to them, they're able to show what the asset base of that municipality looks like, and they're able to show what it is they can afford to do on the one hand, that's the financials, right? If they're able to show what they've done with that money in terms of delivering services and compare it with what they had planned to do. So if they're able to say, well, you know, we wanted to build a 2 water treatment plants or maintain all of our water treatment plants, we could only get to 1. this year. At least you can have the first conversation at council and ultimately even with the citizens and the residents of that municipality about how we get to the second one, when we get to the second one, and what the limitations and challenges are. So for us, it's the very first part of driving accountability and ensuring the integrity of an institution that's there to serve the public. Whether or not it ultimately does that, there are other players that can give that answer. So it's not, does clean audit equal service delivery? It's a component of the journey of building an institution that is strong, that can deliver predictable outcomes, and that can account for those outcomes. So that's why we continue to work on the basis of the clean audit definition as we currently have. I suspect that's a conversation we're going to have to keep having. So it's not either or, I think it's both. You've got to make sure you have a clean audit and you've got to make sure that you deliver services. Honorable Chairpersons, I have responded to the questions that were posed to me. I don't think I've missed any. So thank you very much for the opportunity. Honorable Dodobu, you're still on mute.
Okay, thank you very much, AG, for your further responses to the questions. We have arrived at a point where I think I must make this statement that as Parliament, we have a responsibility to really strengthen our oversight function in relation to the municipalities, so that indeed we hold everyone responsible for their own actions. And in that sense, we make a contribution as Parliament in ensuring that we bring about stability in our municipalities. And I must say, and this is an observation, this term of local government has been the worst in respect of the performance of municipalities in this particular area. And therefore, we need
Honorable Chair, you've gone on mute again.
Sorry, my line keeps on cutting. I was making the point that we really need to make sure that our municipalities work. And it can only be possible if we collaborate as different players and stakeholders to ensure that at the end of the day, we achieve these particular objectives. In the Northwest, the situation has deteriorated. In the Free State, the situation is worse. And in Mpumalanga, as the Auditor General has pointed out, it is regressive, and therefore, as part of our work, we need to specifically pay attention to all those particular areas. Once more, let me take this opportunity on behalf of the two committees, the Select Committee on Appropriation and the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance, to thank the Auditor General and her team that they are always available when we need them, that they are always available to share with us pertinent information that must enhance and strengthen our oversight function. And we greatly appreciate that. And going forward, I think we must do everything possible to put up the necessary systems and structures in place so that with the information that we have received, we use it as Parliament to enforce accountability. Because the buzzword that has emerged out of these discussions today is that there ought to be consequence management. Those who deviate, those who commit pillage and thieving of the public resources must be held accountable. And the onus is on us, therefore, as Parliament, to put up all those systems and the mechanisms in place to realize that objective. And going forward, I think it will help to ameliorate the situation that is obtained at the municipal level. Let me also take this opportunity on behalf of the committees to thank all the players who came, especially members of the provincial legislatures who also shared with us what they see on the ground, their frustrations
and how we can secure improvements in ensuring that we stabilize our municipalities. Thanks, Salga, as well, especially the presenter, Councillor Baloyi, who shared with us their own recommendations and Salga, that this is what needs to happen in their view, and this is how they interact with their member municipalities, because that is also important. There is an area of weakness because Salga need to strengthen that role so that these members who belong to them also jack up their shoes and ensure that at the end of the day, they improve the situation. We have come to the end of this meeting. Thank you very much for your attendance. The meeting is adjourned.